you to the organizers for the invitation to Tropical Toronto. And so I will give a talk about some recent work with David Borthwick and also an overview of this set of issues that go, we call it almost Kähler quantization, as well as some recent work that I've done with Tanya Foss. So the plan is more or less like this. We have a bit of background and general setup. Then I will report on a new proof of a theorem that says that a certain spectral projector for the Laplacian on powers of a line bundle is a Zego type. And then, I'll explain this later. Essentially, I'll have two parts here, the middle part being probably the longest. So this is my setting. We take an integral. I didn't write it here, but in general, think of it as a compact symplectic manifold. And so I don't want to assume that X is scalar. That's the whole point. although that, what integral means that the symplectic form is an integral cohomology class, represents an integral cohomology class. Therefore, we can find the Hermitian line bundle with a connection whose curvature is a symplectic form. So this is the beginning of geometric quantization. Now we pick a compatible, almost complex structure on X, which means that when I form this tensor G, putting J there, we get a positive definite Riemannian metric on X. So from here, then we get the basic setup with this, you know, Hermitian line bundle with connection, pre-quantizing the symplectic manifold, an almost complex structure that is compatible, and therefore X becomes a Riemannian manifold as well. Now, the main operator that we will use in our quantization is the following shifted Laplace semi-operator on sections of the k-th tensor power. So we'll look at the k-th tensor power. K is 1 over Planck's constant. By the way, somebody asked, I think in Montreal, there was a question about why is K the inverse of the Planck's constant? And the answer is that it's because it is, meaning that what is Planck's constant? Planck's constant is a commutator of xi and yi in the Heisenberg Lie algebra. And when you look at the various representations of the Heisenberg Lie group, well, that commutator takes as a central object, it's a quantity that takes on certain values. And if you do the quantization procedure that I just outlined on XCN, you get exactly that. You get the H-bar representation, 1 over H-bar, by taking powers of a certain basic line bundle. So K is 1 over H-bar. So the beginning of the story is the following theorem. So, by the way, I emphasize this over here is the metric Laplacian, the connection, given by the connection. And then we're shifting it by n is half the dimension of x times k. So you'll see later on that this is a subprincipal term that essentially destroys the subellipticity of the metric Laplacian. That's the idea. Anyway, think of it just given by this definition, and the beginning of the theorem of the story is that there exist two constants, such that the spectrum, this should be a box. The spectrum of this operator consists of a band centered more or less around the origin, and then a part of the spectrum that drifts with K. Therefore, there's a gap size K that opens up in the spectrum. As an aside, you can wonder what happens to the spectral measure of the low-lying eigenvalues, and it has a weak limit as k goes to infinity, which is the push forward of the volume on this by some function. And David and I computed a couple of years ago that function is actually basically the covariant derivative of J, norm squared, pointwise norm. So you see that J is integrable. Yeah, so this is in agreement with the fact that if J is integrable, the operator that I defined is a D-bar Laplacian on sections of the line bundle. And you see that this spectral density is zero precisely when the manifold is scalar, which is the case that, sort of the model case that we're trying to generalize. Am I making sense so far? Can you hear me? Yes? Thanks. All right, so quantization means what? For now, the quantization will mean to find Hilbert spaces associated to the manifold. And they will be, we'll define them to be the span of the eigenfunctions of this operator with the low-lying eigenvalues, and we will look at the orthogonal projection. So we can think of the HKs as a kind of almost pseudo-analytic sections in some sense. So one can make that sense more precise by introducing a pseudo-differential resolution of this operator, but I won't talk about that. I just want to think of these as an interesting part of the spectrum of this operator. So some notes is that, well, you know, the HK are only well-defined for large K because the gap doesn't appear right away. But that's okay because all the results will be asymptotic in K. And it is known that the dimension of this is exactly the Riemann-Roch number, Riemann-Roch polynomial of the manifold for K large. So in particular, it goes like volume of X times K to the N. And again, I already said this, that if in case J is integrable, then HK is a space of holomorphic sections. All right? So the theorem, the first theorem that I want to report on is a structural result, that is that the sequence of these operators has the structure of a semi-classical Hermite Fourier integral operator with the same symbolic properties as in the integrable case. And I will say this more precisely. So this part of the talk consists of making this a little more precise and giving a fairly complete sketch of the proof of this. But, yeah, so, absolutely, yes. But before I tell you the theorem with more painful detail, let me tell you some corollaries. One is that somehow this is the Schwarz kernel of the projection. So this is for x close to the diagonal. Notice you have a Gaussian term here. D is the Riemannian distance between x and y. So you have a Gaussian term plus lower order terms, where the leading term is, well, it's like k over n. I mean this part is actually this is the Schwarz kernel on the diagonal, and of course these terms get swallowed up by the remainder term. So I could have just written here k to the n basically. So that's one of the, so we get some concrete expression for, well, some estimate with a nice, very nice leading term for the reproducing, or the Schwarz kernel of the projection, or the reproducing kernel of the spaces. That's one corollary. The second corollary is that one, if one wants to quantize functions, one can do it as in the Beresin-Toeplitz operator case. And it all works very well, so I just summarize saying that this is a representation of a star product. And one has all of the semi-classical spectral constructions associated to general Toeplitz operators. You have a simple calculus. Another theorem that David and I proved more years ago even is that the coherent state maps from X into the, so projectivization of HK. So for those of you, if you want to think of it in terms of algebraic geometry, then I should have written the duals here. And to each point X, we associate the hyperplane of sections vanishing at that point. But since these are Hilbert spaces, I should have mentioned this. I think I did. I might as well identify H star with H. And what I get is the coherent state map that to each point here associates a line, a complex line of coherent states. So we show that anything that has a nice projector of like these spaces, for these, the sequence of maps is nearly, is asymptotically symplectic and also asymptotically pseudo-holomorphic. Asymptotically symplectic simply means that if you pull back the Fubini-Studi metric omega k, you rescale. Then you get close to the fixed symplectic form here. Should have said that part of the interest of this is, of course, the many papers by Donaldson and Denis Roux of using pseudo-holomorphic sections of a symplectic manifold to study its geometry. their notion of pseudo-holomorphic is a pointwise notion. They don't have a space explicitly. They define, they construct sequences of pseudo-holomorphic sections, but they don't have a space. On the other hand, their estimates are pointwise estimates as opposed to our estimates that are more in the L2 sense. So anyway, I'll finish with some open questions about that. So I want to say a few words about Hermite distributions, because these may not be so well known, and I also need them. I need the language later on. So what are these things? Well, so they are a generalization of Lagrangian distributions, and they are associated to isotropics of manifolds. So an isotropics of manifold, in fact, the way they come up in the local parametrization is as a submanifold of a Lagrangian manifold. And the wavefront sets will be contained in these smaller manifolds than Lagrangian. The principal symbols, since the distributions are more sharply concentrated, their symbols sort of what is the word I'm looking for? They spill out of the symplectic of the Lagrangian. You see, when you have a Lagrangian manifold, the symbol is a function or a density on the Lagrangian. But here, since the similarities are more concentrated, the symbol actually spills out of the. What I mean by that really is that the principal symbols are sections of actually it has to be an infinite rank vector bundle over I. And what are the fibers of these vector bundles? Well, you have a half-density part, just as in the Lagrangian case, but then you have this thing. Now, I didn't write down on the slide what that thing was because it's a hard thing to write, so maybe I'll just say it. So I'll take my time saying it. Okay? So this IC represents a tangent space to the isotropic. And then this thing here is the symplectic orthogonal to the tangent space. Isotropic means that the tangent space is inside the symplectic orthogonal. So we can take the quotient. That quotient is now a symplectic vector space, a symplectic normal. Okay. So we now have a symplectic normal. Now, so we have a symplectic vector space here, and a symplectic vector space has a metaplectic group and a metaplectic representation associated with it, which is an infinite dimensional representation. But in there we have a space of smooth vectors, and that's where we that's this part here of this tensor product. So the simple way, and you'll see when we do the local representation of these things, that an element in here will be given by a Schwarz function of the number of variables, which is half the dimension of this space. So you have this. This is the part that I intuitively want to think about as sort of spilling over the symplectic manifold, the manifold. Oops, I shouldn't have. Should have disabled this. Yeah? Sorry about that. So here's what these things look like as an oscillatory integral. So you have a phase function, which is a standard phase function, all right? But then we have a very funny up amplitude. And again, I want to take my time going over this. So we have dependence on x. Tau is a standard, think of it as 1 over h bar. It's a standard fiber variable. But then we have this other set of variables here. And so what about this amplitude? Well, as a function of the third set of variables, it's rapidly decreasing. All right? So these are the symplectic normal variables that I was referring to a moment ago. And it's rapidly decreasing as a function. It's actually a Schwarz function as a function of the third variable. And so, well, as tau goes to infinity, one has some sort of asymptotic expansion of this form. And again, these are Schwarz in the second variable. And roughly speaking, this is not, well, roughly speaking, A0 XU represents the infinity part of the symbol of the previous slide. So let's see what happens with the wavefront set. Okay? So look, what goes inside here, the amplitude is eta over root tau. So whenever eta is not, in directions where eta is not zero, the rapid decrease of this wipes out wavefront sets. You get rapid decay in those states. So the only directions that are of the wavefront set that will survive are where eta is zero. So that's how you pass from a Lagrangian, which this is parameterizing, to a smaller wavefront set, which is the Lagrangian intersected with the directions where eta is zero. So the eta equals zero equation cut down on the wavefront set. But the price that you have to pay is that you have to keep part of the amplitude, carry that along as part of your symbol. Anyway. Okay, so that was a quick look at these Hermite distributions. The main thing that I wanted to point out is that the symbol has this transverse object to it that is a Schwarz function. All right, so what about how do we prove this, that the spectral projector is one of these operators? What does that mean? So we pass to the principal circle bundle of the dual of the line bundle. And because all of the spaces, the reason we pass to here is because everything actually lives there. This principal circle bundle has a Riemannian metric, the Kaluza-Klein metric, because it has a connection, and X has a metric, so that defines a metric on P, and delta is a Laplacian on that. That Laplacian splits as d theta, so it's a circle bundle, so I have an operator d theta, and so I can define dh as a horizontal Laplacian, which actually commutes with this, and dh is hypoelliptic. And we can break the L2 of P according to the circle action. The reason we pass to P, one of the reasons, is that the kth Fourier component of this decomposition are the L2 sections of the kth power of the line bundle. And the horizontal Laplacian is actually the metric Laplacian in this guise when we restrict it to that space. So passing to the circle bundle allows us to roll up all the spaces of sections and the metric Laplacians into one operator, dh. And we have then, one thing to think about is then that we have a pair of commuting operators. If you like, d theta squared, d theta and the horizontal Laplacian. So the precise statement of our theorem is that if you look at the sum of the hk's up on L2 of P and you look at the big projection over that, so you let that, and then I have to look at a part of the cotangent space which consists of the positive multiples of the connection form. I didn't write down the connection form. But anyway, you look at the cone defined by the connection form. Then the Schwarz kernel of this operator, the main projector, is one of these Hermite distributions on P cross P associated to the diagonal built out of this Z fellow here. So this is a subset of the diagonal in T star P cross T, in P, T star P cross P. So it is included in a Lagrangian, and therefore this is an isotropic. Z is actually symplectic. Z itself is symplectic, but Z diagonal is an isotropic. I'm going to inflict on you a slide about what the symbol is. All right. So the symbol, I have to think about the symplectic normal to this Z delta fellow, because that's where the Schwarz portion lives. But it turns out that it is naturally, you can push it down to the tangent space to X tensor itself. And now the transverse, the spin part, if you like, the Schwarz function is something in a metaplectic representation of that tensor product. It's a sum. This should be a sum. It's the Hilbert space becomes a tensor product, and therefore the S infinity part of the symbol can be thought as an operator on the Bargmann space of this. So let me say that slowly. So TXX is a symplectic vector space. It has a complex structure, which is the value of the almost complex structure there. It has a Riemannian metric, so I can talk about the Bargmann, it's CN in this guise, right? I can talk about the Bargmann space there. And that's one of the ways of quantizing this. And so this symbol is an operator on the Bargmann space there. And the X is some projection of course, this changes with X. So I have a field of Bargmann spaces and the symbol is an operator on, it's a field of operators. And what is a symbol? Then, finally, the symbol is the projector, something is the simplest thing, is the projector into the ground state of the harmonic oscillator. So here I have a harmonic oscillator given by the metric, the symplectic form and all that, everything else. And so the ground, the projector into the ground state is that thing. It's a symbol of our projection here. All right, so I'm going to say something about the proof. So the plan of the proof is, first of all, we work with a first-order pseudo-differential operator on P, which makes delta H first order, away from the characteristic variety of d theta. So A is a double, is a classical first-order SIDO that has double symplectic characteristics. And it's actually a function of the operators that commute. In fact, in particular, it commutes with delta H. So this is just a way of making delta H a first-order operator. And up to a finite rank perturbation, the relevant eigenvalues of A, or actually, so the relevant eigenvalues, we're projecting onto a part of the spectrum of delta H, and those correspond to eigenvalues of A that are within epsilon of 0. Up to a finite perturbation. So you give me an epsilon up to a finite perturbation, the relevant eigenvalues are those eigenvalues of A that are within epsilon of 0. And the other eigenvalues are bounded of A are bounded away from 0. So it's just 1 over k times the scaling that we had for the original operator. So first, I'm not going to say anything more about how A is found. It's not hard. Then we construct a first approximation to the projector by taking a function of A. So that's actually where most we have to be careful there. Mostly, it's the more substantial part, and then we do a Neumann series argument. So how do you take functions of this operator with symplectic double characteristics? So what is the theorem about that? So if I have a function with smooth compact support, then A phi, which is just a function of A, turns out to be a Hermite operator of in the same class as our projector. And its symbol can be identified with a function of a harmonic oscillator, which I've written here. So it is essentially you just take the projection onto the an eigenstate L, and the eigenvalue is phi hat of L. So symbolically, it's just taking functions of the harmonic oscillator when you take the symbol. And that somehow, this is the key thing that got this proof on the way. So this is proved by writing this, and then writing this as into the Hollmeister phase, and it's pretty straightforward. Here you see the reason I wrote this is because you see that you have the symbol of A has this general form that the amplitudes of the Hermite operators have. It's a quadratic divided by, it's a ratio of two fiber variables, one squared and the other one not. So it's exactly the same sort. So it's made for this to work. Now, the calculation of the symbol, well, we've seen already that the symbol is operator valued. So we can compute that operator, I mean the symbol, by applying a phi to some test Hermite functions, and we have to use a Boutet-Model-Guillemin transport equation. So there is a transport equation one has to solve in order to be able to apply a phi to this. There is a transport equation. it uses the metaplectic representation. The Hessian is a quadratic form. You can represent it. Anyway. And then we have to compute in geodesic normal coordinate. I mean, actually have to go in and compute. The symbol calculus of these Hermite operators is a little tricky. But anyway, we compute in normal coordinates. So where are we before I start this slide? Where are we? So we're trying to, we have figured out how to form functions of A, and they are Hermite Fourier FIOs. And how can we use that to construct the projector? Well, it's a very nice fact that you can, so phi has to be compactly supported, okay, and smooth. But But it's a very nice fact that you can find such phis whose Fourier transform vanishes at positive integers. Okay? You basically take the characteristic function of 0, 1, or minus 1, 1, and convolve it. And then that's, so therefore, symbolically, by choosing any such phi, the symbol of a phi is a projector onto the ground state. So right off the bat, we have that we can take phi of a and has, to leading order, has the right symbol. Now, there's some algebraic stuff here. This is actually a fun exercise. This is a Heaviside function, actually, because what's inside the root here is actually the square of what's in the numerator. So using this, you suggest using a Neumann series argument. So this 4 a phi squared minus a phi is, I think of it as being that part. And the beautiful thing is that because we have a simple calculus, an a phi to first order is a projector, then a phi squared minus a phi is an Hermite of lower order. Okay? So this A is somehow an Hermite of lower order. It's of order minus a half or something. So we can get started with a Neumann series. And then, well, you do a little, you use this fact a little bit, and you actually get the projector. I realize that I'm going to be done really soon because I'm using these slides. So we can get an extended break. So this is a direct proof then that that these low-lie eigenstates have a good projector and therefore can be used to quantize this. The other topic that I wanted to discuss is the problem of naturality. And I probably should have motivated these problems a little more, but it's too late, I guess. The problem is this: how do the spaces HK vary if we change the complex structure, the almost complex structure? So there's a very nice, so what is some motivation? There's one motivation, which I don't like very much, frankly, is sort of philosophical. What does it mean to quantize, right? And so you just say, well, if you subscribe to the notion that to quantize is to associate Hilbert spaces to symplectic manifolds, well, we have shown you a way to do it. Well, that works nicely semi-classically, but you've made the choice of a complex structure. The question is that a reasonable thing to do? What happens when you change the complex structure? So there's a beautiful geometrical way of setting this up. Take a manifold of compatible almost complex structures. Perhaps take the infinite dimensional manifold of all compatible almost complex structures. And let's not worry about how large K has to be to get a kind of vector bundle, right? So I get now a vector bundle with fibers quantizing Hilbert space. I want to see it, now think of the variation in the almost complex structure. And one way of asking whether quantization is well defined is whether there exists a projectively flat connection on this bundle. Now, I'm sure many people have asked this question. I learned it from a paper by Montgomery and Ginsburg, where they show that there isn't a very natural one with respect to the action of the group of symplectomorphisms. Well, right, other than this metaphysical question about what happens when you change the complex structure, is there any other motivation? Well, the fact is that there are very interesting cases where the answer is yes. For example, the linear case, which is elementary, and then the non-elementary case of the moduli spaces of flat connections over surfaces. So this is this whole Chern-Simons story, right? That you take the moduli spaces of flat SU2 connections over a surface, that is your Kähler manifold, and there's a way from taking any complex structure on the surface to induce a complex structure on the moduli space. And it is I have a submanifold of complex structures on the moduli space of flat connections. And the answer for that, in that case, the answer to this question is yes, there is a projectively flat connection on that space. The construction of that connection was given by, the rigorous construction was given, I think, first time by Hitching, using hypercohomology and stuff that I actually don't know. In spirit, it comes from the linear, from an infinite dimensional linear case and some reduction. So there are some very interesting cases, and whenever you have actually in both cases, certainly in the linear case, this gives rise to interesting representations. So one wonders what happens in general. In addition to that, there is a rich geometry of the set of all compatible structures that Donaldson has been studying recently. When you look at all compatible structures, you get an infinite dimensional symplectic manifold. The symplectic group of, maybe the Hamiltonian, the group of Hamiltonian flows on X acts on it with a moment map, which is a portion of the curvature. And so there is a lot of structure here, and it's just interesting to think about whether you can find these projectively flat manifolds of complex structures. Well, there is a connection that is handed to you by the geometry, and that's the L2 connection, because no matter which almost complex structure you pick, the HK that appears by the process I described before or by any other process that is, you know, sensible, they are all, the HK will be contained in a fixed Hilbert space. This Hilbert space, I'm not changing the Hermitian structure or the connection on the line bundle, so they're all fixed. And so immediately you get the what I call the L2 connection. You differentiate in the ambient Hilbert space L2, and then you project back. And the question is that, does that ever have a chance of being flat? Any guesses? Well, you can compute what the curvature of this thing is, and you know, it's variations of the projectors and so on. This is elementary. It's a cute connection because it has some relationship with the Schrödinger equation. This is also elementary here. So take a function and call its Hamilton flow phi t. Pick an almost complex structure J naught and move it around by the push it forward, pull it back by the flow. So the flow preserves the symplectic form, of course, but it'll change the complex structure. Well, so now I have, so the picture, right, is that I picture the manifold of all complex structures with this vector bundle on it, fibers being the quantizing Hilbert spaces. So, and I have this metric connection then, and so I have a path on the space of almost complex structures, so we get parallel transport. That's PT. On the other hand, we get the Schrödinger equation. This is the topless quantization and the solution to the Schrödinger equation. This is not semi-classical, by the way. This is k-fixed here. Then it turns out that the push forward by the, just geometrically pushing forward a wave function by the flow, is the same as solving the Schrödinger equation and then doing parallel transport. I didn't know this fact, but somehow the Schrödinger equation arises geometrically as comparing simply pushing forward with parallel transport with respect to this L2 connection. I didn't know that. Okay, so I promised to say something about the linear case. The linear case, well, it's when your manifold is a symplectic vector space. Take the space of all compatible linear complex structures. So this is the Siegel upper half plane. There are many descriptions of this. Some Lie algebraic, but let's just think of it as a space of as what I just said. It's very easy to see that the tangent space to this consists of endomorphisms that anti-commute with A. And this has a symplectic structure, a linear symplectic structure, which is just given by trace of AGB. We have a slide. So the theorem, which is it's not hard. It's very nice, though. So quantize this by Bartmann spaces, then the curvature of the resulting bundle, so you get for each J, you get an infinite dimensional quantization. The curvature of the resulting bundle is central and is equal to the symplectic form. So for the linear case, it works beautifully, which is the model case. So a little result that we have in the general case. So let's go back to the general case of the beginning. J can be anything, really, because I'm just computing the curvature at a point, really. So pick a complex structure and two infinitesimal variations of J. So by what I said in the previous slide, At each point on the manifold, at each tangent space, I have an A and a B, so I get two endomorphisms. So everything now depends on the base point of the manifold. And the calculation using this Hermite-Fayolle calculus says that the curvature of the L2 metric, of the L2 connection, is an Hermite-Fayolle asymptotic to a Toeplitz operator with this symbol. So we get pointwise, the symplectic structure that of the linear case. It's interesting, by the way, that the integral of this function is a symplectic form of the space of all complex structures. So you see this. What is the punchline here, other than the formula, is that you see for the curvature to be central, right? So that means, you know, that the symbol should be a constant. Right? So the bottom line of this is this, that if you want to have, you know, projectively flat, if you want to look for a manifold of almost complex structures that is projectively flat with respect to this thing, you have to ensure that for any two tangent vectors to your manifold of complex structures, this number is a constant with respect to x. So it's actually very, very hard because this function obviously can be anything. So all of these, in the general case, as soon as you leave the linear case, this is completely open. And I have absolutely no idea. Actually, I do have some ideas. I shouldn't say that. It seems like a hard question, though. Anyway, let me finish with two open questions. One is... whether going back to HKs given by our eigenfunctions of the Laplacian, are there any sections with symplectic zero set? So I raise this question again because of the work of Donaldson and Deniohu, where they construct sequences of sections with symplectic zero set. We don't know whether our functions do that. Well, there are some ideas to modifying the symbol, modifying the construction to make sure that that happens. One would want to dream, I guess, that anything semi-classical can be done symbolically. Maybe. And the second question about the second part, which is open, is for which symplectic manifolds are there projectively flat submanifolds of complex structures? And again, this is perhaps more philosophical than anything else, but you know, not all symplectic manifolds are created equal. Some come from physics and some others don't. Right? And the Lagrangian is really the fundamental object here in the quantum theory, not really the Hamiltonian picture. And I think we're seeing, you know, a small reflection of that here. I wish I knew how to make this precise, but you know, there are some symplectic manifolds that arise as by looking at a Lagrangian, looking at critical points of the Lagrangian, and dividing by gauge equivalence. And one knows how to quantize those, I think, much more than your garden variety symplectic manifold. But any kind of intrinsic characterization of that distinction is a mystery to me. So we finished early. That's all I have to say.